This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Malawi is battling a cholera outbreak that began at the start of the rainy season in November. The disease has killed 4 people while more than 150 others are hospitalized.
Lamech Masina reporting from Blantyre. Full details coming up.
Also, 5 Kenyan police officers are dead after members of the Al-Shabaab Islamic militant group attacked their vehicle today. A suicide bomber attacks a mosque in Nigeria's northern Borno state today, killing at least 10 people. And Ethiopia's prime minister announces plans to drop charges against political prisoners and close a notorious prison camp.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, 5 Kenyan police officers are dead after members of the Al-Shabaab Islamic militant group attacked their vehicle today. Officials say 3 police reservists and 2 senior officers were killed as they were traveling in the northern county of Mandera near the border with Somalia. The Somali-based Al-Shabaab has launched a series of attacks in Kenya since 2011. The attacks are in revenge for Kenya sending troops to Somalia to drive them out of the capital, Mogadishu, as part of a team of African Union peacekeepers and Somali security forces. Al-Shabaab remains active in Somalia, trying to overthrow the government and install a strict form of Islam. It has deployed bomb attacks against government, military, and civilian targets.
A suicide bomber attacked a mosque in Nigeria's northern Borno state today, killing at least 10 people. Witnesses say the attacker entered the mosque in the town of Gamboro shortly before dawn prayers and detonated his explosives, reducing the building to rubble. The attacker is among the dead, witnesses said. No one has claimed responsibility for the bombing, but it bears the hallmark of Boko Haram, which has been engaged in a bloody 8-year insurgency aimed at establishing a strict Islamic state in northern Nigeria, leaving 20,000 people dead. Police, civilians, churches, and mosques have been among its targets.
Former presidential candidate and pastor Abed Wanika says President Museveni signed himself out of office by signing the controversial Constitutional Amendment Bill of 2017, known as the Age Limit Bill. Linda Nabulsi, the president's press secretary, said Museveni signed the bill into an act of parliament on December 27th before sending communication on December 29th of 2017. The president signed the controversial bill into law despite warnings from religious leaders and civil society. In his New Year's message to Ugandans on December 31st, 2017, Museveni praised the 317 legislators who supported the amendment, saying they played a great role when the country was at a crossroads. The law means that Museveni, who is 73, can run again for re-election in 2021. He has led Uganda since 1986.
Ethiopia's prime minister has announced plans to drop charges against political prisoners and close a notorious prison camp in what he calls an effort to widen the democratic space for all. Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn's surprise comment today came after anti-government protests engulfed much of the Oromoya and Amara regions in recent months, affecting businesses and transport networks. Ethiopians were quick to respond, even with social media sites currently blocked. Renowned blogger and former detainee Bafakadu Hailu wrote, "I am writing you this, struggling with my tears. All these pledges need to be implemented immediately."
Malawi is battling a cholera outbreak that began at the start of the rainy season in November. The disease has killed 4 people while more than 150 others are hospitalized. Lamech Masina reports from Blantyre.
the disease, an acute diarrheal infection caused by consuming contaminated food or water, affects children and adults and can kill within hours if left untreated. The hardest hit districts are Nkatabe and Karonga on the shores of Lake Malawi. Joshua Malango is the spokesperson for the Ministry of Health.
As of today, we have almost 137 cases which have been registered from Karonga only. And unlike Karonga, Nkatabe, there are only 16 cases as of today with no deaths. While in Karonga, we have had 3 deaths.
The Kasungu and Dowa districts have registered 1 case each, while on Tuesday, medical workers confirmed 2 cases in the capital, Lilongwe. The outbreak is believed to have been triggered by poor hygiene among residents, especially in Karonga. Special Absalom is a journalist based in Karonga. He told VOA that over 70% of people there use untreated water.
People who are along the lakeshore area use water directly from the river. Others who are close to the rivers are using water from the rivers, and some are even using wells.
In neighboring Zambia, the disease has killed about 40 people in the capital, Lusaka, and affected more than 1,500 others since September. But Malango says Malawians bordering Zambia should not panic over Lusaka outbreak.
We are not that close with Lusaka, but still more, we are not taking life. We are putting measures to ensure that people traveling in and out of the country, they must have proper surveillance. We have checked them to ensure that Malawians are safe.
Meanwhile, Malawi's government has embarked on a nationwide campaign to remind people to wash their hands with soap, especially after using the toilet and before eating any food. More importantly, Malango says the government is distributing chlorine and other chemicals to treat drinking water. Malawi suffered its worst cholera outbreak in 2009, when 82 people died out of over 3,000 cases across the country. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
China's ban on the domestic ivory trade has come into effect after being announced at the end of 2016. Some African conservationists are calling it the best news for elephants in years, but there is concern that the market will shift to nearby countries. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
The legal sale of ivory will no longer be able to occur in mainland China, a move heralded by conservationists, who say that the legal trade has been providing cover for its illegal counterpart, perpetuating the belief that it is okay to buy and own ivory. Max Graham, CEO of the elephant conservation group Space for Giants, welcomes the news.
I think the fact that we've seen China take this stand means that there's a new conservation superpower in the world that is taking its responsibility seriously. And, you know, we're hugely enthusiastic about this because obviously it's ivory, the ivory trade is a huge challenge, but the illegal wildlife trade more generally has many challenges in Asia, particularly China, where traditional uses of wildlife parts have been fueling the massive loss of species, of rare species around the world. So to see China take this stand is very encouraging. It's the best Christmas present that the conservation community could actually have.
China announced the ban at the end of 2016 and put it into effect at the end of 2017, surprising those who thought it might take up to 5 years. Conservationists are optimistic, although they say it is too early to predict how it will be enforced. Save the Elephant's CEO, Frank Pope, believes the ban could prove transformational for the fortunes of elephants, but gives one caveat.
As you squeeze the balloon of the Chinese trade, you're going to see secondary markets popping up around the borders. And that's what we're already seeing in Vietnam, in Laos, in Myanmar, and even in Hong Kong, which functions as external to China. All of these places have markets that have boomed with the restrictions, the looming restrictions in China.
Like his conservation colleagues, Philip Maruthi, Vice President of Species Conservation at the African Wildlife Foundation, also praises the ban and notes the importance of preventing the market from shifting to other locations. And, he says, elephants will not be the only beneficiaries.
You know, about 35,000 elephants, the number you've heard quoted many times, are lost each year. there is about 415,000 elephants on this continent. That means that within 20 years, if the pace is kept of that loss, we will not have elephants. And therefore, all the aspirations that African people have for using wildlife and associated habitats for development, tourism in countries like Kenya, South Africa, Tanzania, and all that, those aspirations will not be met. So this is big. It is not just about elephants. It's also about the economy. It's about African people's well-being. So it's about our heritage. So China, this is a significant step that China has taken.
Conservationists say that although combating poaching is critical, one of the bigger threats to elephants in the long term is habitat management. They urge African governments and China, through its support, to help reduce these threats. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Five Kenyan police officers are dead after members of the Al-Shabaab Islamic militant group attacked their vehicle today. A suicide bomber attacked a mosque in Nigeria's northern Borno state today, killing at least 10 people. And Ethiopia's prime minister has announced plans to drop charges against political prisoners and close a notorious prison camp. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Since 1987, the Gulu district in northern Uganda has faced the brunt of the war waged by Lord's Resistance Army rebels against the Uganda government. Thousands of men, women, and children were abducted, killed, raped, or maimed. Many were first forced to join the rebellion. One man has chosen to heal the unseen scars of many survivors using what he calls comfort dogs. Halima Athmani traveled to Gulu town and brings us the story.
11 years since the end of the civil war launched by the Lord's Resistance Army rebels against the Ugandan government, tens of thousands still struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder. Mental health practitioners estimate that 7 in 10 people in northern Uganda were traumatically affected by the war. At the age of 12, Francis Okello Loya, a community psychologist, now 29, was blinded by a bomb blast as he dug in their family garden. The bomb shrapnel entered deep into his left eyeball socket, leading to his blindness. In a boarding school for the blind, Okello found it difficult to ask people for help, especially during toilet visits at night. This was the birth of the Comfort Dog Project idea.
I had to navigate my way from the sleeping quarter to latrine, and that was not easy. And these dogs came to know that I needed help, and they began the practice of helping me from the sleeping quarters to the latrine. Being a person of visual impairment, you normally feel that you're going to burden people a lot.
While dogs are mainly used for hunting in Uganda and a few people warming up to owning dogs at home, especially for security, Okello went around collecting street dogs that are treated before being handed over to their guardians who get training in dog handling. Inspired by the school guard dogs in 2015, Okello started the Comfort Dog Project to help people in Gulu town, especially those suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, depression and anxiety. Phil Dakum, 35 years old, is one of the 29 beneficiaries of the Comfort Dog Project. She was abducted by the LRA in 1997, together with her four brothers, and taken to Sudan. One of her brothers tried to escape. And she says she got him and they started cutting him from the hands, legs, neck, and he died. Another brother was selected to go to the battlefront and he was shot dead. She says 2 days later, her youngest brother contracted cholera and he too died. She says this all left her traumatized. She returned home and joined group therapy, and that's how she got her dog, Lock Oroma. 39-year-old Lucia Dot spent 5 years in the bush as a corporal. I was in combat and saw many people being killed, she says. I was destroyed. When I returned home, I experienced flashbacks, and any loud sound sounded like a bullet. When I learned that I could get a dog as a friend, I took on Sadiq and now spend a lot of time with Sadiq. I have dreams of our games during the day, and slowly, Sadiq replaced the bad memories from the war. The dogs find a home, and the guardians, life companions. It is the hope of these former child war victims that their own children don't have the same fate, but play and enjoy their childhood. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Gulu.
Early detection of breast cancer saves lives. Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women worldwide. As VOA's Carol Pearson reports, scientists are working on finding new ways to detect breast cancer while they are studying existing screening methods to find out what is best.
During a mammogram, a technician takes an X-ray of a woman's breast that's compressed between two glass plates. A radiologist then examines the image for tumors. Mammograms undoubtedly save lives. The number of deaths from breast cancer has fallen by 30% in the U.S. since mammography was introduced in the 1970s. That's because when cancer is found early, the chances of beating it are greater. Mammograms are the best screening tools available, but they aren't 100% accurate. A mammogram can look normal even when cancer is present, and it can look abnormal even though there's no cancer in the breast at all. Standard mammograms are two-dimensional, but for the 40 to 50% of women with dense breasts, both tumors and breast tissue can show up as white masses on 2D images. Three-dimensional mammograms show a more detailed view of the breast, so women with fibrous or dense breasts may benefit from a 3D screening, says Dr. Otis Brawley at the American Cancer Society.
It might find disease that we need to find that two-dimensional does not. There are potential cons in that it has a higher cost, higher amount of radiation given every dose, every time a person has the test, as well as it may find a higher number of false positives.
Cost aside, one study involving 13 U.S. hospitals showed that three-dimensional mammograms picked up an additional 40% of invasive cancers. For an even better picture, a woman could have an automated whole breast ultrasound. During this procedure, a woman lies on her back as the ultrasound device moves in parallel rows, so no areas of the breast are missed. The exam captures between 3,000 and 5,000 images that are then interpreted by a radiologist. Dr. Megha Garg is the director of the Breast Imaging Program at the University of Missouri Cancer Center.
This is a new screening technique. It helps detect additional breast cancers in females who have got dense breasts.
The whole breast ultrasound doesn't use radiation, so it poses less of a risk than a mammogram does. But Garg says it's not time to ditch the standard mammogram.
This tool does not replace the traditional mammogram. Mammograms are the gold standard for finding breast cancer. This helps the mammogram in those females who have got dense breasts.
Studies are underway to find out which techniques are the most effective. While North America, Western Europe, and Australia have the highest rates of breast cancer, the World Health Organization reports that almost 50% of the cases and nearly 60% of the deaths occur in less developed countries. If we could improve detection and treatment, at least 400,000 women's lives could be saved every year. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A recent study by the Global Nutrition Report 2017 shows that eating beans bred to contain more iron boosts memory and attention in college-age women in Rwanda. The biofortified beans could prove significant in a continent where iron deficiency affects both adults and children with dire consequences. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Kigali.
Today, Genevieve Mukanama is drying beans in preparation for the market. Mukanama exports biofortified beans to Uganda. She sells a kilogram of the beans for around 50 cents, a fair price here. With the proceeds from the sales, the widow, who is the sole breadwinner for her family of 13, is able to meet her family's basic needs. However, it hasn't been smooth sailing for Mukanama. She says it took a while before the locals accepted the biofortified beans.
When I started growing these beans, it was difficult. Getting a market for them was a huge challenge. Residents here were not familiar with the beans, so I had to start off at very low prices when selling at the market. But over time, my customers have come to like the biofortified beans, and demand has increased.
A recent study by the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, SIAT, has shown that eating beans with higher iron content improved the cognitive abilities of women aged between 18 and 27 years. Dr. Innocent Mbarushimana, one of the scientists who analyzed blood samples of the participants, says iron deficiencies are often ignored. But eating the biofortified beans, he says, has major benefits.
Currently, here in Rwanda, even in the whole of Africa, people do not understand that biofortified beans are more rich in vitamins and proteins than other foods or fast food that they take. And again, they are more affordable than other foods.
Rwanda University Professor Jean Gahutu, who works closely with a global program, Harvest Plus, says because women of reproductive age are at a higher risk for iron deficiency, biofortified beans are the best way to combat the problem.
If you want to fight iron deficiency by distributing supplements, it may not treat the whole population. If you want to add supplement to the food may not be efficient, it's very expensive. But if you obtain a crop that is better variety, that gives good yield so that the population likes it, then you are sure to reach the whole population.
For farmers like Genevieve Mukanama and her customers, adopting biofortified beans will mean the fight against iron deficiency is being won one bean at a time. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Kigali.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
The Voice of America, VOA.